Chapter 8. Iron at Bay. 999.M30. Golcis, the Vulpa Straits, Sactrada Deeps. Dantioch was drowsing in the catalepsian sleep when the alarm sounded. Both hemispheres of his brain jolted into full wakefulness, but he suffered a brief disassociative moment as their operations meshed before he could respond properly. His reactions were slowing.
Gatekeeper report.
The vox crackled like it was 500 years old, blurring the words of the gatekeeper.
Warsmith, you must come to the operations center immediately. The enemy is back, and in numbers I cannot calculate. Vastopol, are you on duty?
Asked Antioch. Vastopol was the 14th Grand Company's warrior poet, and as such excused watch duty.
Ardendus is afflicted, my lord, responded Vastopol. His gifts are failing, according to Apothecary Malzor. I offered to take his watch. I'm on my way.
A garrison under siege slept in its armour. Dantioch had minimal preparations to make. He snatched up his helm and bolter from his arming stands, slammed the door release, and ran out into the corridor. So, Ardendus's implants were failing. He wasn't the first. One after another, their emperor-given organs had started to malfunction. He had warriors whose sight was blurred, others whose joints locked or muscles weakened, and those who could not keep their rations down. Night after night, the Harud poured through the system in ever greater numbers. Since the Primarch's victory on Gugan, the trickle had become a flood. Every passage left his men weaker. Soon, he was sure, they would begin to die of old age, as the mortals had. Mortals, he thought. They were all mortal now. Alarms blared throughout the fortress. The tramp of armored feet hurrying to battle stations echoed along every corridor. The air thrummed with the sound of heavy machinery powering up the weapons batteries and void shielding. His ears, attuned to the moods of mechanisms, picked out irregular rhythms in the workings of the Titanic engines. The machines suffered as much as his men. The left leg of his own armour clicked with every third step, a slow wearing of components he would not be able to replace. The Iron Warriors were experts in supply, and the fortress housed massive stores of parts, but these too were affected by the ageing effects of the Harud, and had decayed at the same rate as those in use. 2 days ago he had opened a brittle case of replacement fibre bundles, the data stamp signifying the manufacturing date to be no more than 4 months past, only to find the items within useless.
We have indications of a major temporal vortex occurring in the southern sky, Warsmith,
voxed Vastopol.
Multiple minor incursions on 15 levels.
Dantioch's helm chimed as Vastopol inloaded the data.
I will go to the eastern wall walk, so I may observe the celestial phenomenon myself. Stand by for my orders. Be on guard, Warsmith. We are registering multiple contacts along that route.
Dantioch hailed his warships in orbit, 14 of all classes. The ships were built to last and weathered the nightly wash of entropic energies well. Their crews were another matter. Though the Harud ships could not contend with the Imperial vessels, each close-range encounter left corridors littered with geriatric crewmen. Like the garrison, the fleet's strength was being bled from it second by accelerated second.
Another night begins, brother captains, Dantioch voxed. Engage at distance. Do not approach within the foe's temporal umbrella. We have lost too many men already.
Without waiting for a reply, Dantioch closed off the line and brought up an overlay of the fortress on his helm visor, searching for nearby squads.
Sergeant Zolan, you're close to my position. Join me. As you command, Warsmith,
voxed Zolan. Dantioch quickly went over his Grand Company's disposition. He had worryingly few legionaries left. Just over 300 remained on the planet, out of the 500 he had brought with him. There had been over 2,000 penal auxiliar troopers embedded in his force, but the majority of them had perished in their first encounter with the Harud, aging to living skeletons in seconds, then crumbling to dust before his eyes. He had dispatched the rest of the fleet to crack the arena on the far side of the straits under Captain Chalxis's command.
He could only assume he was now dead, along with Warsmith Calcoon at Stratopoli. Both had reported Harrod incursions within days of the migration beginning. Astropathic communications had fallen silent soon after. D'Antioch gave orders as he ran, commanding that the guns be ready, ordering repair teams to the southern wall, rousing his men to war so that all of them were prepared for what was to come. He came to a T-junction in the corridor. Cut 6 weeks ago, it had been perfectly angled, clean grey stone. Now it was pockmarked and crumbling. Wherever the Harrod had been, they left their marks. In the beginning, the Harrod were so few that D'Antioch had been able to use the damage they left to calculate the extent of their entropy field's influence at 1.5 metres. He understood now that these had been wayfinders, some kind of scout. Perhaps their migration fleets used the Golkis system for the same reason that Perturabo had commanded the Warsmith to take it. The straits it guarded were a corridor through the unstable stars of the Sactrada deeps. These small suns burned with cold volatility, pumping out unexpected bursts of high-energy particles. But why the Harrod appeared in so many numbers in his fortress, why they came off their ships at all, why they flooded through the short run of the watercourse, all of that was inexplicable. No one knew how the Harrod travelled, or why their presence had such a catastrophic impact on space-time. It could be the Harrod were deliberately targeting the fortress as they fled, in retaliation for the warrens cleansed during compliance. It could be the Iron Warriors were merely in the way of their unguessable migration routes. Both theories might be correct, or both wrong. There was no way to tell. The Harrod were as mysterious as they were troublesome. Zolan's squad fell in beside him, 6 space marines, where once there had been 20. "Be ready," said D'Antioch. "There is a major incursion building." "Yes, Warsmith," said Zolan. His anger of a few days before was gone, replaced by the steely vigilance of an Iron Warrior facing enemies at the walls. They came to the Portus Majora, leading into the eastern battlements, where the fortress extruded itself from the mountain into Golkis's hard landscapes. A smaller letway was set into the gate. D'Antioch was reaching for the press panel when he saw rust spreading across the metal. A terrible cold burned his hand through his gauntlet, and he snatched it away.
"Back!"
he shouted. Space-time quirked. He'd been told by Tech Marine Tavare that the effects of the Harrod on the surrounding environment bore some resemblance to those recorded at the very edge of the Singularity Event horizon. D'Antioch had not yet been close enough to either an Harrod or a star vortex to test that hypothesis. Half a dozen bolt guns rose together. D'Antioch kicked at the door release, his own bolter up. His foot passed through the temporal field, bleeding through the door, and his flesh tingled. The door juddered open unhealthily. A single Harrod blocked the way. It was taller than a mortal, though not so tall as a legionary. Its shape was obscured by the oily swirl of time bent out of true. Through gaps in its distortion field, D'Antioch glimpsed the filthy robes the being wore, along with the hint of a weapon in its clawed hands and a face set with bulging eyes occupied by pupils so large the entire surface was black. His men fired the instant the door was cleared. The Harrod smacked its free hand into something attached to its side, and time slowed to a crawl. D'Antioch could see each individual bolt moving through the air, slower than projectiles fired into the ballistics gels used in the weapons ranges in the forge. Many misfired, the propellant charge in their rears sputtering out. Of the handful that penetrated the thing's protective field, none hit their target. They vanished in flashes of displaced reality as the very fabric of the universe twisted around them. The Harrod's weapon discharged with a hiss. A bolt of flickering plasma took one of Zolan's men in the chest. He burned inside his armor, flailing as his flesh was consumed. His helm lenses shattered, releasing black smoke and twin streams of bubbling liquid that rolled down his cheeks. D'Antioch dropped his bolter and snatched out his power sword. The Harrod lunged for him. The touch of it was death itself, and he felt the life run from his body as it was drained of vitality. He convulsed with pain and stumbled backwards. There was a cry from behind.
"Protect the Warsmith!"
Two iron warriors threw themselves at the thing. It screamed hideously, and Dantioch reeled back. His power armor was scorchingly hot. The legionaries cut down the Harad quickly. Its entropic field blinked out, affording them a glimpse of its bizarre alien physiology. The flexible arms and legs, the long neck, a baby-like face with superfluous mandibles, before it dissolved into a stinking puddle of matter. One of the space marines who had saved Dantioch staggered back into the line. The other lay dead on the floor. His helm was corroded through, and the face beneath was as desiccated and wasted as an ancient mummy's. Dantioch's armor pinged and creaked as it cooled. There was a patina on the bare ceramite of his arm. When he clenched his fist, his bones ground against each other and his muscles ached. He motioned his men on, and they passed into Golcus's freezing night. The world's hydrological system was minimal, so the sky was clear. No moon orbited Golcus to soften its darkness. The stars alone provided illumination. However, this night they were drowned out by a bright wheel of actinic light turning in the sky. Oppressive energy poured from it, sapping the strength from the legionaries. A headache gripped Dantioch's skull, but he forced himself to observe, to see what he might report to his Primarch, no matter the cost to himself. Dark patches moved over the vortex's fluid surface. The ships of the Harud, a fleet of them, enough to waste a star system by their presence alone.
"To the battlements," he said painfully. "Move!"
Golcus shuddered to a tremor. Earthquakes and stellar outbursts always accompanied the Xenos' major incursions. The cliff above the fortress wall walk was a dizzying pattern of black crevices and dark grey ridges. It curved round to meet the wall, where a door was set into the rock. Above it rose the solid, blocky silhouette of the watchtower bastion. The iron warriors staggered on under the deadly shine of the phenomenon. Their suits pitted, their limbs weakened. They reached the parapet 10 meters away from the door, 100 years older than when they had left the fortress.
"It has never been this bad," gasped Zolan. "There must be millions of them up there. The plane. Look onto the plane,"
shouted one of the legionaries, and there was a note of panic in his voice. Out on the dusty wastes, there was a painful shimmer of the same quality as the vortex in the sky, a silvery curtain of light that had the look of a Pict whose colours had been reversed to negative. Through the curtain's undulations came a horde of Harud, so many that they appeared to be more a liquid that poured itself over the plain rather than a body of individuals. Their entropic shroud tortured the atmosphere into a frantic dance. At its edge, carbon snows fell as gas condensed out of the sky. Towards the middle, the air shimmered with heat. The Harud moved as silently as an army of ghosts, advancing on the void shields of the fortress. The guns housed in the wall's embrasures activated, barrels acquiring targets and preparing to fire. The thrumming of powerful generators made the stones rumble. A band of Harud advanced before the horde and came to the void shield, its barely perceptible shimmer flaring brightly as the aliens encountered it, bringing more light to the surface of Golcus than it had experienced for millennia. A crackling boom preceded the shield's collapse as it burned itself out. The mountain shook.
"The generators are overloaded! How is that possible?"
said Zolan.
"Who knows what is possible here? How does one displace time into the warp?"
said Dantioch. His throat ached.
"They use the life of the universe as a weapon. Void shields will not stop such a thing. Only will and iron."
A thin black line of dead Harud, like scum from a filthy tide, marked the position of the down shield. The aliens held for a moment, then came on again in a single mass. Converging in an arrowhead on a single point, they trampled the mush of their comrades' bodies.
"That's it,"
said Dantioch.
"They've passed the inner range marker."
"Right into the killing field," said Zolan. "We may die, but so shall they."
The fortress guns gave voice. Blasts of fire shot from the walls, driving back the dark light of the Harud. Munitions fell among the creatures, but most did not explode. Instead, their explosives decayed or their metal failed. Some went off with weak bangs or shattered into flakes of oxidization mid-flight.
Where they did detonate, hundreds of the Harad died, but the Xenos were so numerous that they swallowed up the bombardment like the ocean swallows stones. Dantioch put out a general order to his men that they come out to repel an escalade, and the Iron Warriors crowded onto the wall, weapons ready. Support teams set up their heavy armament and unleashed their long-range weapons into the creatures.
Ready!
Commanded Dantioch. His breath was coming hard, and the irritation in his throat was becoming unbearable. He coughed a little, but far from alleviating the sensation, it worsened it. The sound of 300 bolt guns racking simultaneously was loud enough to penetrate the thunder of the bombardment.
"Pick your targets!"
he shouted. The main body of the Harad did not come for the walls. They sank out of sight into the ground, some 400 metres short of the fortress.
"They're going into the watercourse," said Dantioch. "Stay alert! Watch for the soldier cast!"
He scanned the silent black mass. They made no direct attack, but drained away into the ground to follow the channel in the rock. He leaned out over the wall and looked down. The stone was crumbling over the course of the subterranean river. It would be worse on the south wall.
"Why aren't they attacking?"
said Zoltan hoarsely.
"We cannot prevail! But I would put the metal to them."
"They do not need to attack," said Dantioch.
A garbled vox message screeched in his ear. He could make no sense of it, but the source was clear. He looked to the sky.
"They are moving into attack vectors in orbit," he said. "It will not be long before they move on us down here."
The tide of Harad ships were crawling apart from one another, their uncertain shapes tilting. Then lightning stabbed across the sky. Purple aurorae coursed over the planet's atmosphere as the fortress's upper void shields absorbed the energies of exotic weaponry. Light stabbed out from the crowd of Harad, targeting the weapons batteries.
"Heavy teams, concentrate on the discharge points!"
shouted Dantioch. The effort made him cough. More Harad advanced from the shimmering curtain, and these were all of the soldier caste. Strange lights surrounded them, and odd, flexible-limbed walkers staggered in the midst of their throng. Half of these bore strange bulbous cannons, and they advanced to range and set themselves squarely into the ground, opening fire not many metres from the edge of the light curtain. Glimmering energy loops caressed the wall, shearing off the barrels of guns and toppling buttressing in showers of crumbling stone.
"They have all this back to front! Why send their non-combatants forward before their warriors?"
said Zolan.
"The entropic field. So many of them together will kill us more surely than a gun,"
said Dantioch. Every passing second weighed on him more heavily than a decade. Vox bursts took all his attention.
"Warsmith, there are Harad in the fortress,"
said the first. A dozen more followed, all shouted over the sounds of frantic combat.
"This is Squad 40! They're pushing on the gate!"
Before Dantioch could request further details from the sergeant, his ident rune blinked out, replaced with the doleful red of a mortis signifier.
"The gates!"
Dantioch said, and pointed back the way they had come onto the wall. The gates blew outwards, carrying the small figures of legionaries on its shock front. Their bodies moved unnaturally through the air, and the blades of shattered metal that chased them fell to the ground in slow motion. Harad warriors oozed out onto the eastern wall before the dead of Squad 40 had a chance to hit the ground. Their presence was discernible only obliquely. They slithered into a firing line like black sheets dragged through midnight waters. But though they appeared ethereal, the Harad's weapons were not. Green blazes skipped through reality, punching iron warriors from their feet in showers of melted ceramite and adamantium. The legionaries were sluggish to respond, slowed by age.
"Fire!"
ordered Dantioch. His voice was a croak. All around him the fortress was falling into disrepair, as surely as if it had been left abandoned for long millennia. Erosive runnels marked the surface of smooth ashlar. Metal corroded and failed. The beating mechanical heart of the fortress faltered, and alarms rang from every quarter. The Harad were pressing in from the gate, while others were attempting lesser doorways onto the walls.
"There are Harad on every level!"
Vastopol voxed him urgently.
"Give me numbers!"
shouted Dantioch over the whooping howls of Harad, temporal weaponry, and the return thunder of bolt guns.
"Warsmith, I can provide no clear estimate. There are too many of them. Auguries are going dark across the engagement zone.
Dantioch cursed. The Iron Warriors were being pushed back into a knot on the wall. Lesser doors in the cliff face behind the wall walk were opening. No more Space Marines emerged, but more Harrod came out. The Iron Warriors' heavy guns were falling silent. His warriors faltered, their lives worn away by the pernicious temporal effects of the Harrod. By the time the aliens were close enough to attack with their envenomed claws, eschewing their guns, the legionaries in the front line could barely stand. Casualty figures ticked upwards relentlessly. The planet shook with another powerful tremor, causing Golkis to roar in pain and send sheets of rock tumbling from its peaks.
"We can't win,"
said Dantioch suddenly. The Iron Warriors lowered their weapons.
"To the watchtower,"
said Dantioch.
"There is little we can do here."
They ran swiftly along the wall walk, their footfalls pounding against the stone in time with the beat of the guns, an explosive metronome that paced out the measure of their lives heartbeat for heartbeat. But the entropic fields of the Harrod made a mockery of time's progression, and they aged as they ran, their fortress bathed in deadly temporal radiation. The door to the watchtower was set directly into the stone at the end of the wall walk, centuries away. Dantioch's breath wheezed in his helm as he ran. The tremors grew to a fully-fledged earthquake, bringing down the wall behind them. The soldier caste Harrod on the plain had advanced beyond the point where the migrating aliens sank from sight into the ground, intensifying the wild temporal effects bedeviling the defenders. Space Marines fell as they ran, their rusted armor falling to pieces and shattering enfeebled bones. Those Iron Warriors that could fought in a desperate rearguard action, their efforts hampered as time began to skip. Moments from the future impinged on the present. Dantioch was no longer running, but stood indecisively.
"We can't win here," he said suddenly.
Then he was running again, and the door was close at hand. He reached for it, but found himself rolling from bed as alarms stirred him from slumber.
"Gatekeeper, report."
He shook the past away. He focused on the present, the door to the watchtower. The tides of time tugged on him like those of a surging ocean, pulling him out to drown in deep water. This was no illusion, but a genuine effect. Iron warriors around him flickered from being, shrouded by the same squirming of tormented time and space. Dozens of them were dying. Dantioch slammed into the door. The mechanisms to open it were blinking erratically. The metal was holed with corrosion. He kicked at the door, denting it. He raised his leg to kick again, but the strength was not in him, and his foot skidded off the metal. The battlements rang to the horrific shrieks of the Harrod, virtually indistinguishable from that of their weaponry.
"Melter,"
he panted. He reached out a hand. He was exhausted. The cries of the Harrod were getting closer. Someone pushed a fusion charge into his hand. He slapped it on the door and stepped back. When it went off, the sense of displacement in time intensified. For a moment, he had no idea where he was, flitting up and down his own timeline. Cold wind stroked his face, making him start. A deep valley plunged away at his feet, the mountain on the far side of its shadowed gorge hazed by distance. His hands were boy's hands. He wore a rough shirt and no shoes. Something bleated below him. Marooned on a ledge was a young caprid. He shook away the confusion caused by the visions of war and monsters and began to nimbly climb down to rescue the animal. He must hurry, or his father would be angry with him.
"Dantioch,"
a voice said.
"Warsmith."
The scene dissolved. Vastopol was in front of him.
"I was on Olympia,"
said Dantioch. He looked at Vastopol's face.
"You have become old. We all have. What are we to do? What are your orders?"
Somehow he was in the watchtower, the tall bastion and control hub of the fortress. Machine consoles burned. Techmarine Tavare worked with the methodical nature of a man in his laboratory, repairing what he could. The thick plasteel door had become a hauled piece of scrap. Iron warriors took its place, barring the doorway, ducking in and out of cover and loosing shots down the stairs at the things creeping up them. A wave front of killing cold preceded the Harud, alternating with unbearable heat. The stones screeched as it shifted within their deadly entropic fields.
"They're targeting the warsmith,"
snarled Zolan,
"making him sick with age."
"Her brother,"
said Vastopol. The warrior poet's face was gnarled with wrinkles he had not had earlier that day.
"They're coming again,"
shouted Zolan. Dantioch shook off his fugue. With a thought, he tripped the emergency extraction beacon in his armor. It signaled the Iron Ward, his flagship cruiser in orbit above Golkis. Within seconds, Stormbird gunships would be scrambling to collect them.
"We leave this fortress,"
said Dantioch.
"Seal the door with stone. We will not be returning."
Zolan nodded and brought forward a demolition team. They slammed charges onto the stone that anchored themselves into place with self-tapping bolts. Their battle brothers died, providing covering fire.
"Back! Back!"
Zolan shouted. Screeching Xenos warriors reached into the room with long, flexible arms and yanked a space marine from his feet. Zolan grabbed his hand and pulled back, but to no avail. Against a healthy iron warrior, even a crowd of Harud would stand no chance. But their entropic fields had enfeebled him, and he was dragged to his death.
"Detonate!"
ordered Dantioch. Stone blasted into the room, banging off their armor in fist-sized chunks. Gravel pattered down, swirling veils of pulverized rock drifting over the mound of rubble blocking the entrance to the control chamber.
"All this, destroy it too. Leave nothing for them,"
said Dantioch, gesturing at the systems yet surviving. He watched his weary men limping from place to place, laying charges. There were 9 of them left in the control chamber. Dantioch opened a voxlink.
"This is your warsmith. Warriors of the 14th Grand Company, heed me. Iron that will not bend will shatter. We withdraw. All who can, make your way to the landing pad. Iron within! Iron without!"
There were pitifully few voices to give the response. The iron warriors withdrew in a cloud of rock dust and fire. The Stormbird's engines screamed as it leapt skywards. Dantioch watched the planet fall behind them on its internal screens. The Harud continued to pour over the plains, disappearing into the ground as they flowed on towards their mysterious destination. Warriors swarmed the battlements, and their guns continued to pound the fortress. The scattered dead of the Iron Warriors lay on the rockcrete of the landing pad. Several of them had died as they had run for escape, their bodies giving out. Stormbirds rose from other parts of the fortress, bearing away the few survivors. From the control room, only a few had made it to the landing pad. No others had heeded his call to join him there. 4 in total had escaped. Tavare lay wheezing against a bulkhead, barely able to move. Vastopol was in little better shape. Sergeant Zolan was the worst, however. He had fought to the end, stumbling only as he entered the belly of the Stormbird. He had fallen on the landing ramp as it closed, and had not moved since. Dantioch had wrestled his helm from Zolan's head, and now he sat at his side, holding his hand. Away from the Harud, his mind cleared a little, and, more than the terrible weight of age, it was shame that made Dantioch bow his head. He had failed.
"Prepare the warp engines for emergency jump,"
he voxed the ships in a croaking voice.
"We withdraw."
Zolan gripped his hand a little tighter. Roomy eyes opened in a face so aged that it no longer looked human.
"You did what you could. Not even Lord Paterabo could have held that fortress,"
said Zolan.
"You were right, my friend. We should have left days ago." "No one can blame you, Dantioch,"
whispered Zolan, his head sagging to one side. His words were slurred, as if with sleep.
"Retreat is not in our nature.
Dogma is no substitute for wisdom."
"Try telling that to our Primarch,"
said Zolan. His withered lips managed a smile. His eyes slid closed. Dantioch bent over the sergeant's ear and whispered into it.
"From iron cometh strength.
From strength cometh will. From will cometh faith. From faith cometh honour. From honour cometh iron. This is the unbreakable litany.
And may it forever be so,
breathed Zolan. It was his last breath. Four personnel runes remained lit in Dantioch's helmplate. Zolan's flickered and went dark to the chime of the mortis sign. The noise of atmospheric passage ceased as the Stormbird broke the hold of Golcus's weak gravity. The silence of space offered Dantioch brief respite from a war that could not be won. Now, he must face Perturabo.